Hi, this is Josh with the Inside Selling Podcast, a podcast about selling without selling your soul, where I explore how to sell, but from the buyer's perspective rather than the seller's perspective. Last week, I received 15 LinkedIn connection requests, and I ignored them all because they're what advertising legend David Trott calls white circle connection requests. They all look like white circles, the same. And when your marketing and sales messages look the same, people ignore you too, because the brain is a pattern-making machine. It ignores patterns so that it can concentrate on more important things. It's why you don't pay attention to every single car while you're driving. If you had to pay attention to every single car and where you were going, your head would probably explode. So to stand out, you have to be a red X in a sea of white circles. And when you're a red X, the brain pays attention to you because you're different. And it has to decide, what do I do with this different thing? The concept of the red X is very important when we're doing outreach, because the first question your prospects ask when they receive your marketing message is, should I pay attention to you? And if your prospect says no, and you're a white circle, you don't even get to go to the second question they ask. I'm super excited to chat with Rachel Gray about the first question and the other three questions your prospects ask before they decide if they want to take a meeting with you. We've got a lot of ground to cover, so let's get to it.
I mean, it's funny you talk about cars on the road, because I was chatting a couple of weeks ago with a friend of mine, and we were chatting about this phenomena that sometimes happens, and you hear people say it when they get stuck like a hamster in a wheel and they're doing the same thing every single day. They're taking the same commute every single day, driving from A to B. And you get into this point where you get to B and you go, I don't remember how I got here. Like, I know I was diligent the whole time and I'm a careful driver and whatever it is, but it's such a routine and it's such a pattern at that point that they're not 100% absolutely present in every single moment of that journey from A to B. So it's really funny.
So I kind of go through the same things over and over again in my daily commute and in my job as a sales professional. These are the templates that I've been told to use. This is the cadence that I'm told to do. And I become, as you put it, like a hamster. And so what's the problem with that? Isn't routine and isn't that good? I get to the place the same way every time. I mean, isn't that good for me? What's the problem with that?
I mean, sure. It's easy for your job. You want to set up a cadence. You want to send the same canned email every single day. How easy did your job just get? You just automate everything and you just sit there and you pray that something clicks in that automation. It's not good for the people that are receiving your messages, because guess what? If you're sending them, so are 1,000 other SDRs or BDRs or AEs out there.
Now, for clarity, I want to separate this idea of automation from the actual messaging. Are you arguing that automation as a category is inherently evil and not good for prospects? Or are you saying that the actual way in which we're automating is perhaps not as good as it could be?
I mean, it's the same in sales as it is in marketing, and people get into this set and forget kind of mentality where they go, I'm going to set everything up and I'm going to hit play and it's just going to go. You know, it's the way that our lives have become. Netflix autoplays everything now. YouTube autoplays everything. We don't have to do anything anymore. We press play and we tune out. There's got to be things in our messaging and in our outreach and in the research that we do and in the work that we do that drags us out of that set and forget mentality and brings us back into the I'm a human and I'd like to make a connection with another human.
Yeah, I love it. So with the set and forget mentality, I guess the impact of this or the problem is we typically see anywhere from, I don't know, 3-4% response rates on a good day from some of these automated pre-canned templates. And what we're not taking into account is the 97% of the people that we're not hearing from and the addressable market that we're burning out. And I'm of the belief that when we make people feel bad or nothing at all, they're less likely to want to talk to you. And if we can make people feel good or something, they'll be more likely to talk to you. And the more people you talk to, the more people you can help. And the more people you help, the more money you make. So in the spirit of being able to connect with people and make them feel good with outreach, you talk about this humanizing emails. And I've heard this term before. Heck, I've probably even used it. And I don't even know what the hell I don't even understand what it is even. But talk to me a little bit about how we break out of this hamster wheel and perhaps take a subset of our customers that are our high value customers and we're a little bit more humanizing so that we make people feel something in our emails. Talk to me a little about that, Rachel. What's your perspective? Yeah.
Look, I think that the market is shifting and the sales profession is shifting towards this in general. You know, when I first started in sales, I was going door to door and I was told, play the numbers, play the numbers, play the numbers. And playing the numbers is one thing, but what that's doing is it's turning every conversation you have into a number and not a conversation. So people are forgetting to listen. They're not seeing this person as a person that might have a problem or a pain that you can help with. It's seeing them as a number, and I'm going to hit this KPI and I'm going to, you know, prospect, lead, number. That's what everyone becomes.
Yeah. Right. And so we get into this rut of we're looking at opens and we're looking at clicks and we're looking at responses. And we're happy with 5% response or 4% response, but we're not really focused on the other 97% of the people that are not responding. And how are we making those people feel? Because you only get one chance to make a really good first impression. And first impressions are long lasting. And if you can make a really good one and make someone feel something in a good way, they'll be more likely to want to talk to you. So how do we start to think about that? How do we start to think about, maybe we have these automated sequences going for, you know, our tier two or tier three accounts. We have this, you know, quantity, you know, bucket thing going, but maybe we carve out, like, maybe there's 20 or 25 or 30 of our key accounts that are high value accounts to us that we want to do something a little bit different and we want to make a better first impression. We want to stand out a little bit. We want to be, as Dave Trott calls, a red X in a sea of white circles. How do we start thinking about that? Is there a formula you follow? Is there a strategy on how you start to think about this? Do you start with the buyer? Do you start with Canada? I don't know. Talk to me.
There's a couple of things I'll say to this. The first one is, you know, as this market's shifting, people are told, you know, social selling, and you've got to look at your buyer and you've got to find a connection. And a lot of people are starting to do this, but they're doing it in such a structured and formulaic way that they're looking at a LinkedIn profile, they're pulling out the university or pulling out the city that this person's in, and they're writing one line about, hey, yeah, I've heard of this university, my buddy went there, here's my pitch. Or, hey, yeah, that city, heard it's cold there, here's my pitch.
I love that. Yes, I get those all the time. Or your mascot is this. So this is not what we're talking about. This is really interesting, because there's a difference between personalization just for personalization's sake and what I call relevance, which is, how are you going to make my life better? And there's a difference. So let's talk about that. So I love what you just said there. This is not your mascot. This is not you live in Canada. This is not, you know, saw your podcast, very generic things. So talk more about that.
I think it was, you know, on that, last week I was at a sales event and John Barrows was speaking, and he said the amount of people that open like a message or a call or an email to him, and they open with love your podcast or love your blog or love your post on LinkedIn, and then they go straight into the pitch. It's at the very, very minimum, pull something out of that that gave you value and put that back into the message. So, hey, I loved your post on LinkedIn, or I loved your blog. You know, these are the reasons why I loved it. This is what resonated with me, and this is what made me actually want to reach out.
So have it be cohesive. It's almost like when we were in school and we had to have the main idea connect to the other paragraphs. Now when I get these emails, it's like we have the main idea of your mascot and then the paragraphs are disjointed. I'll give you another great example. A few weeks ago, I got a red X message on LinkedIn. What do I mean by red X? Something that stood out. It was actually a blue rectangle. And if you're on LinkedIn, you might know what that is. A blue rectangle on LinkedIn is a LinkedIn voice message. Yeah, and you can only send these on your phone. And automatically, that answers the first question that your prospects have, which is, should I pay attention to you? And the answer was yes. You automatically get to go to the second question your prospects have, which is, do I like you? Like, what's the first feeling I get? So I hit the play button. And it was from a woman named Nellie, and she gave me a genuine compliment on the book that she had purchased, my book called The Badass B2B Growth Guide. And it was a genuine compliment because she was calling out a play. But then what she said is something really interesting. She went to the third question, which is, can you help me do something better? And then she said, hey, I noticed on page 54 that you have a couple of grammar mistakes. And she showed me where the grammar mistakes were in a picture and actually edited it and said, hey, by the way, I'm an editor. Would you like me to go ahead and edit your book? She goes to step number four, which is, are you credible? And instantly I took a meeting with her and hired her on the spot. So that's a great example of what you're talking about, Rachel, which is taking something that you observed, but laddering it to a way in which you can actually help someone be more awesome. I don't know if you have other examples of things like that, Rachel. Or
I mean, what I was going to say, like, we've seen a rise. There's reasons why, you know, companies like Terminus or Sendoso exist, where they're doing very specific, very one-to-one things. They're sending gifts. They're doing account-based marketing. You've got LinkedIn voice messages. Video is so on the rise. You know, you actually connected with me by sending me a video. And immediately I was like, wow, I love this. Like, how could anyone not respond to that kind of personalized outreach? You sent me a video. You said there was something in my LinkedIn profile. You repeated it back to me and then asked to sort of connect and have this discussion. So there's so many different ways that people can do this. But it is, as you say, about leveraging these in the right kind of way. Like, don't just randomly send someone maple cookies because they're in Vermont. You know, you've got to tie that back to exactly what it is that you're doing, what value you could add to them, or what potential pain that you have found that you believe that they have.
That was the question I was going to ask you with, like, products like Sendoso I'm familiar with. But this is not like sending someone a $5 Starbucks card saying, do you want to meet with me, right? That's not going to make someone really feel good. Anyone that you're sending an email to probably can afford a $5 card. Remember, this to me gets back to the four questions that your prospects are secretly asking themselves when they hear from you. Step number one, should I pay attention to you? Step two, question two, if you answer yes to that, you get a question two, do I like you? If they answer yes to that, they go to question three, do you help me do something better? Do you have to solve a problem that I'm having? If you answer yes to that, you go to step four, are you credible? And only when you answer all four of those questions, if you keep that in mind in your outreach, do you have a good chance of someone being able to lean forward and want to have a conversation with you, especially if you can do it in a way that makes someone feel something. And I think to your point, Rachel, the video that I sent you, I could have sent you a text, but you feel a different way when you're using video because I could use my personality, I could use my hands, maybe you see something, you're just a little bit more likable, perhaps.
Yeah. And I mean, let's put side by side, if someone sends you a LinkedIn message that's text that says, hey, Josh, hope you're well, versus someone that sends you that blue rectangle, that LinkedIn voice message that's like, hey, Josh, hope you're having an awesome day. Like, what is the difference there in the way that it makes you feel?
And that's exactly it. We're really talking about how you make people feel. And I would love to get your perspective on this, Rachel. I was having a conversation with Ryan O'Hara, who's a VP of marketing over at LeadIQ. And he talks about this, which I thought was a really interesting perspective. He thinks the future of prospecting is going to be like little ad agencies where there's going to be pods of people working together, salespeople, maybe engineers, maybe graphic artists. And they're going to have the prospect like they're doing an ad campaign saying, how are we going to put our heads together creatively and think about a really good first impression or a first touch so that we can be memorable and make someone feel something. What are your thoughts there on how we make a really good first impression, like even now and even going into the future?
Yeah. And that's account-based sales, right? You've got to find a way to connect with something that someone is passionate about. And we talk a lot, whatever your methodology is, if you have a methodology that you follow, it might be Sandler, it might be Spin, it might be, you know, gap selling, whatever that is.
Could be Josh Braun.
It could be Josh Braun.
Okay, I'm putting it out there. No,
they all tie back to one thing, which is a pain or a problem that person has in their business and the value that you can add to them by solving that or helping to alleviate that pain or that problem. But when we talk about pain and when we talk about problems, they bring forth negative feelings, right? If I'm going to hop on and ask you to talk about a really big problem that you're having in your life, you're going to start to feel a little bit negatively and that it's going to associate that negative feeling with me. Right.
Totally.
There's a reason why people go, you know, maybe my therapist is great, but I hate going. Right.
Totally.
I hate talking about my problems. It makes me feel negatively.
So how do you get around that? How do you address a customer's problem without being associated with that negativity?
It's about keying into what they're passionate about and what they care about and using that to solve the problem. So if I'm talking to a VP of sales and they have a really big problem where they've got a bunch of reps that are sending out, you know, different kinds of emails, different kinds of offers, they're sending a quote to a customer that is, you know, 30% undervalued, they're really annoyed by that. That's a big problem. But I've got to go, okay, so what does this VP of sales care about? in their day to day, what is it that drives them to get up in the morning and go to work? What is it that drives them to connect with their team and try to make things better?
Yeah, this is a really important point. You know, most of the people that are selling have never done the job of the person they are selling to. So oftentimes there's a disconnect between what a salesperson thinks the reasons are for people buying and why people actually buy. The lingo is often very, very different.
Yeah, and we've heard this, that people, you know, buy emotionally and justify logically, I think is what people say. And I don't 100% agree with that. I think people make decisions emotionally, but then they rationalize and they make that decision with logic and they back that up with logic. So it's emotionally, you know, if I'm understanding this person, how they're feeling and the pain that they have and the problem that they're having, I now need to back that up with the logic of the solution. How do you envisage that solution?
Yeah, too. And I think if you don't know that lingo, and it's perfectly reasonable for you not to know it because you've probably never done the job of the person, there's a couple things you can do. Thing number one is you can actually talk to customers that bought within the last 30 days and use a technique called jobs to be done. It's an interview technique that is the only one that I know that actually gets you to the causal reasons as to why someone bought. And you can't ask someone why they bought because they won't tell you. If you say to someone, why did you go on Weight Watchers? They'll say to lose weight. But when the jobs to be done interview technique, you'll hear things like this. I didn't want my thighs to rub together because I was going to my 30th high school reunion and I wanted to like hook up with my ex. Like those are the lingo of the customer. And so when I hear language in cold emails, save time, save money, these generic things, it means that you're not close enough to the customer and you got to get to the customer's lingo. And the only way to do that, if you've never done the job yourself, is to actually talk to customers using jobs to be done or to shadow customers to understand what is the job they're trying to get done and how did you help them do it better specifically. And if you're using things like save time and money, you're not in their world.
Yeah. Yeah. It's a difference between a problem and a quantified problem.
Really. What do you mean?
It's getting below that surface level of the problem and actually quantifying that to their business and who they are as a person, right?
Totally.
You did a really, really nice job. I love the video series that you do on LinkedIn called I Teach My Wife Sales.
You know, my wife is asking for more money for season two. So
you're going to have to renegotiate. She knows her value now, right? One of my favorite episodes or little videos that you did, you were in the car with your wife and you were trying to talk to her about moving, right? And the question that you asked, which was beautiful, was, let's say we move. What does your life look like to you there? And she started out with a couple of little negatives, like we won't know anyone, like we won't have a couple. And then she started talking about, you know, but, you know, maybe I'd be doing X, Y, Z. Maybe it would give me an opportunity to volunteer. And you were like, volunteer where? What would that be like? And she kept going. And by the end of that conversation, she'd gone from discussing a pain and discussing a problem and then becoming excited and energized and actually feeling good about what that solution was.
Yeah, no, we're getting a little off. I mean, that's exactly what it's a motivational interview technique, because people only will change for their reasons, not your reasons. And so if we can get people to voice their own motivations, you know, why might you want to do this? Then we could see that a little bit motivation, then they'd be more likely to want to change. Sometimes as salespeople, we force our reasons for change on people. And we often wonder why they disappeared, because it wasn't their reasons. And so that's a really, I don't remember what episode that is, but it's a really good technique that you could practice on people to understand why might people be motivated to change, because change is awfully hard. I'd rather dance with the devil I know. We talk about problems all the time, but I want to make something very clear. And if you've seen my content, you know this, I've written about it several times. The problem isn't enough. We talk about this concept of a struggleometer. I have problems all the time. So do you. I mean, so my computer takes 3 minutes to boot up, but I'm not in the market for a new computer, but I'll sit on a computer demo, but I'm not buying right now because I'll just turn my computer on and let it boot up. But fast forward 2 months and all of a sudden my computer hard drive is making a strange noise and I have a keynote speech, I'm a buyer. So oftentimes with outbound, we're talking to people that just have a long time booting up and we're surprised. Why aren't they closing? Because the timing isn't right. And we often don't have a strategy in place when we're booking the meetings to nurture them. And so what are your thoughts there, Rachel? I know I have some thoughts, but what are your thoughts on, hey, we booked a meeting with someone, We've done it in a very human way. And oh my God, surprise, surprise, they're not high enough on the struggleometer. They're not in the red zone yet. They're in the green zone. They're taking a meeting because, hey, they got to stay at work till 5 o'clock and I'll burn 45 minutes checking out a new computer demo. What are your thoughts there, Rachel?
It happens all the time. It happens every single day. And it happens to some of the very, very best salespeople as well. Even myself, I probably say once a day, oh, I need a new one of these, but I hate shopping. I hate going to the mall. You know, it won't be until something breaks and is completely dysfunctional for me, then I'm going to go to the mall because I just hate them, right? So it's about really, people will see a problem as what it is on its face value, right? You'll see this computer, it's slow. It takes 3 minutes to boot up. Or, hey, my boots are a little worn out. But you know what? It's getting to the end of the winter time anyway, and I don't like the mall, right? It's about using that emotive and using that personal connection to find that what you care about, Josh, is, you know, you need to run a business, you need to run coaching sessions, you know, you care about helping people. And if you're not able to run your podcast, if you're not able to get on calls and help people, how is that going to make you feel? Probably not very good.
Totally. Yeah. And I think this really comes back to something else too, which is we can't actually create urgency. We can shine a light on something and say, hey, have you considered this? Or were you aware of this? I talk a little about this before when I walked into the running store. If the in-store associate said, what brings you into the store today? Nothing. Do you have a problem? No. Hey, have you ever considered getting your running gait checked? What do you mean? 10 minutes later, I'm on a treadmill and I have pronated feet and I'm buying sneakers. So we can shine a light on problems, but ultimately, sometimes the timing is bad. Sometimes it's just not enough struggle yet because people, they're doing just fine. They're getting the job done. And the cost of switching, because I have to fire something when I hire something else. And there's a lot of habit to the pull. Like my mother-in-law is really looking at going into an elderly care facility, but she's been living in the same house for 25 years. And so they're trying to market to her and pull her in. But what they're not doing is being sensitive to the habit of the present. This is part of jobs to be done stuff. Your customers have a habit of the present too. I know my computer. Yes, it takes 3 minutes to boot up, but all my programs are on there. I don't know. I got to move all the data off. I don't know if something's going to get messed up. I got to put on my programs again. The Apple Store is going to make me download the newest version. I'm going to pay $80. It's all this mishigas in talk to my Jewish friends out there that I don't want to deal with. And so the question, Rachel, is what do we do as salespeople when we realize on discovery that they're in the green zone? We have to get out. We can't spend our time wasting with people that are not ready to buy this quarter. What do we do to those people while they're not ready to buy? What's your strategy there when you realize on discovery, like, hey, you know what? I don't have a buyer this quarter, which is perfectly a reasonable outcome when we're doing
it. Yeah.
What do you guys do over there when you realize that? What do you do in those cases?
That's totally fine. Do you know what? I'm going to keep these people in my funnel and in my pipeline.
What does that mean exactly? When you say keep them in your funnel, what are you
specifically doing? I'm not closing them off in my CRM. I'm not getting rid of them. I'm not, because I know that these people have a need, just not yet.
So what are you doing exactly? Right? What are you doing to stay top of mind?
I'm connecting with them on LinkedIn. Uh-huh. Right. This is where, you know, things come in, like sending them a LinkedIn voice message after a couple of months, not to say, hey, you're ready to buy right now, but to say, hey, how's everything going? Just got a piece of content, wanted to fire it off to you, thought this could really help you. We discussed X, Y, and Z. And, you know, even if it doesn't come from the company that I work for, but if I come across a piece of content, a blog post, a video, a podcast that discusses exactly the issue that I've discussed with them that they're trying to deal with, I'm going to send that to them.
Yeah. So chefs do this really well, right? You see a chef on TV and the chef is teaching you how to make a recipe week after week. You watch the chef and then one day you're in the market for pans. And you go to Williams-Sonoma and you're like, oh my God, Emeril Lagasse pans. I'm going to buy those because he's the one that's been teaching me stuff. So if you go on my feed on LinkedIn, it's a nurture track. Everybody that doesn't buy, that's not in the red zone, that engages with me, sees that content coming up every week. And it's something that they're interested in, right? It's a sales lesson that teaches someone how to be smarter, like a chef teaches someone how to make a recipe. I take that same content and I put it into an outreach sequence. I've got 12 of them that drip out over the course of 12 months. And when people are ready, when they're ready to buy the pan, when they're in the red zone of the struggleometer, who do they think of? They think of Emeril Lagasse. They think of me. And then when they come back, they're in the red zone. But oftentimes I see that people don't have that strategy. You don't need your marketing department. You can just do this with a camera. Interview people that your prospects would find interesting. Turn on your camera and shoot something on LinkedIn, answering a question that your prospects might have about a topic that they're interested in. You as a salesperson are the marketer. They're going to buy from you. They're going to like you. And so when they see you every month, rather than a marketing newsletter, you're going to make them feel good. And when they want to come back, they're going to want to come back to you. So I don't know what your thoughts are there on that, Rachel, especially in this day and age where we can connect with people on LinkedIn and literally they see us popping up on their feed from time to time, like you see my stuff, like I see your stuff.
All the time. Yeah, I totally agree. And it comes back to that whole, you're not seeing this person as a number. You're not seeing them as a lead or a prospect, or they're not buying right now, so I'm not going to waste my time on them. This is a relationship between two human beings. That's what humanizing is. You're taking away that wall that you're building up between the two of you, of seller and prospect, seller and buyer, salesperson and prospect. You're going to throw that in the trash and you're going to go, this is a relationship that I've built, regardless of whether this is bringing me money tomorrow or on my next paycheck or paying for my steak dinner. I'm going to continue to help that person because at the end of the day, that's what I am. You know, that's what I'm doing. I'm helping them.
That's well said. And I think as salespeople, our most precious thing that we have is our time. And we end up wasting time with people that aren't ready to buy now. We have to be really good at knowing that we don't have a buyer, which is okay, because we're going to put them in a great nurture track that we just talked about. Where we get into trouble is where we assume that we can close everybody this quarter and we end up chasing and following up and end up being that desperate person because we don't have a strategy for falling back on, hey, it looks like because I've asked these questions, and there's specific questions we can ask to know if we have a buyer. I mean, one of my favorite ones to ask is something like this. Hey, how long have you been looking for something like this? Like, where are you in your buying journey? Have you been looking at this for like 6 months or just starting out? Because remember, nobody wakes up in the morning deciding they want to buy your software or your car, or a car or a house. There's a journey. And so if I'm hearing someone that's like, this is the first time I've ever looked at this, I know for sure 100% that I'm not in the red zone. So I can provide some, you know, get some information, provide hopefully some tips and tricks, and then say, hey, it looks like you're not ready yet. You try this wisely. How about I send you a book? From time to time, I send these videos, teach you how to be a better chef. Would you like to be a part of that? Sure. And then I get out and I focus on the red zone people. So that's another key thing, is to know the questions to ask to determine if you have someone in the red zone. And I think as salespeople, we go through this discovery process where we're asking a bunch of questions. I don't even know why we know if we're asking them, but we have to zero in on struggleometer questions. Do we got someone with a struggle that's high enough that they're ready to do something about it now? And oftentimes from an outbound perspective, the answer is not really.
Mm, yeah. And it's funny you say, like, we don't know sometimes why we're asking the questions that we're asking. It's people playing the numbers. They're told to ask the questions. They're given a script. They've got a list of questions and they're playing the numbers. They're just spitting that out there because they have a methodology, but they haven't made that their own. They haven't brought that methodology into who they are as a person and then been able to connect person to person with someone still following their sales methodology. And that comes down to practice.
And I think the biggest problem with it is it's a sales methodology, not a buying methodology. Because oftentimes it's a disconnect, right? Because if we take a look at the jobs to be done, and I keep mentioning this because it's so key. I did a lot of this work when I was at Basecamp. The jobs to be done research and methodology is all based on the events and circumstances that eventually cause someone to switch away from what they were currently doing and fire it to something new. And when you start to think like the buyer and not the seller, it completely changes your buying process. Because your selling process, because you're thinking, where are they in that continuum? And I know that if they're at the beginning of that continuum and the struggleometer is at the green zone, there is nothing to sell and I can't accelerate it. I can shine a light. Hey, Josh, were you aware that when only half of your grill is working, you could have a propane leak? What do you mean? Well, if I could test it, if you light your match, you could get an explosion in your face. Well, I didn't know that. All of a sudden, I can go in the red zone. I didn't cause it. I shined a light on it. We can ask those smart questions. But if we're not struggling, I do. As you can see, I got beautiful eyebrows. But that's exactly it. It's like, how can we start to think more like a buyer? And my tip and takeaway here is read up on the jobs to be done framework and get into the mindset of a buyer, interview those customers and understand their journey and get really good at knowing where are they on that continuum. Yeah. Are they at the end? Because if they're at the end, my discovery question is really different. If they're at the end, I'm saying something like this: what do you need to see today to help you decide if you want to switch? What do you need to see?
I'm so glad you said that.
I'm not going through a 50-question discovery test, right? What are your thoughts there, Rachel?
No. I mean, those kinds of buyers, if they come in, if they're coming to you and they're at that end point in that continuum and they're ready to buy, they've already done everything else. They know they have a problem. They know that you're the solution to that problem. They've done their research. They've probably gotten testimonials. And where you're going to win out over other people is going, okay, I understand where you're at in your buying process. What do you need from me?
Yeah. What do you need? Go back to the great Zig Ziglar, guys. Zig Ziglar is one of his great questions. And you can, maybe it sounds hokey, but you can, I like it. Hey, I know this might sound a little corny, but scale of 1 to 10, 10 being you're ready to move forward. Where would you put yourself? They say a 7. What would it take to get you to a 10 today? It's the same kind of idea. If you're sensing that someone's at the end, meaning they've told you they've been doing this for 4 months, they tried this, they tried that, this hasn't worked. They're at their wit's end, they're pulling their hair out, they're about to lose their job, they're in their red zone. Don't go through 50 question discovery. What do you need to see to make you more comfortable? And then just show them that and see if you can get a commitment. And it's changing. The discovery process is different based on where the person is on that continuum. But we have to kind of know where we're at. And I think one of the great questions to ask at the beginning is, how long have you been looking for stuff like this? Are you like your buying journey? You guys at the end here, been at your wit's end looking for 6 months? Or are you just shopping, just starting? And you'll kind of know pretty quickly where they are.
Another great one is a book by Daniel Pink. You've probably read it. It's called To Sell Is Human. And they did this study where they took three different groups of people. And two of the main ones and the key focuses were the empathy and the perspective. And they had people posing as a buyer and a seller. And they told the seller, you can't go below this price. And they told the buyer, you can't go above this price. And it was different. There was a discrepancy, right? And they split these people and went, you're supposed to take an empathetic approach. You're supposed to take an approach focusing on the other person's perspective. These were the two most interesting ones for me because we talk a lot about salespeople's empathy, but not a lot about perspective. And the ones that took the perspective of the buyer won out way more than those that were empathetic.
Now, what's the difference between perspective and empathy? Because I would think those are the same, aren't they? Or are they different? I'm not tracking that.
It's a difference between understanding a problem, being empathetic to that problem and relating to the person, and putting yourself in that person's position from that buyer's perspective.
Like, give me an example. Let's role play this.
It's exactly what we're kind of talking about, where we're going, totally understand, Josh, that, your barbecue is down a burner. That's really horrible. I spoke to a buddy of mine. He had exactly the same thing. We had a barbecue at his house. It was a total failure, right? Like, that's probably going to worry you, right?
And that would be empathy, or that would be perspective?
That would be empathy.
Okay.
You're going, you're empathetic. That's tough. That's awful. I mean, that must play on your mind, right? That must put a lot of pressure on you for your next dinner guest.
I get it.
Right. And then perspective is going, exactly what you just said. So, where are you at? How long has this burner been a problem? Right? Are you just starting to look for a barbecue? Like, where are you, mentally and emotionally, where are you in this buying process and how are you approaching this?
I love it.
Yeah.
Rachel, you've said it all. one quick word from our sponsor, which is, me. This episode of the Inside Selling Podcast is sponsored by the Badass B2B Growth Guide. It is a series of 78 plays to help you fill the top of your funnel.
Amazing.
You want to start conversations with. If you want to check it out, salesdna.co/badass. Rachel, if people want to get in touch with you, learn about your company, chat more about with you because you're such a smarty, how do they do that? What's the best way to connect with you?
Definitely connect with me on LinkedIn. It's probably where I'm most active, just /RachelGray16. I am Sales Lady Rachel on Twitter as well. So if you want to connect with me on Twitter, then
sales
you can.
Sales lady, Rachel. And what quick plug for your company. What do you guys, how do you guys help people do something more awesome?
So I work with Proposify. It's a SaaS solution for sales proposals and collateral. What we're trying to do is save salespeople time. We're getting them beautiful proposals out to their customers, helping them maximize the revenue from every single deal.
Listen, people, who doesn't need that? Go see Rachel. Rachel, thank you so much for carving out some time to chat. You have been a pure delight to talk to.
Thank you. Thank you for having me on. This has been amazing, a lot of fun. And you know, I learned a lot as well. You're a great guy to talk to.